All right, welcome in everyone to the Deep Dive. We're going to be unpacking a really interesting Supreme Court case today.
Yeah, this one has some pretty significant implications out there.
It does, it does. It's the case of Polselli v. IRS, and it centers around how the IRS can go about collecting unpaid taxes. So we've got the court's opinion here, of course, and some expert analysis to help us break it all down.
Yeah, we're going to try and make this really clear and understandable for everybody.
We'll see. We'll see.
Because it gets a little tricky.
It can get in the weeds. This is really a case, like a lot of cases, that sits right at that intersection of the government needing to be able to collect revenue.
Right.
And, you know, our own expectations of privacy.
Okay.
And especially when we start talking about our financial record.
And money. Yeah.
So let's jump right into the situation that brings us to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
Okay. So we have a taxpayer. A guy named Remo Polselli, and he had racked up a pretty hefty tax liability. I mean, we're talking over $2 million owed to the IRS.
Wow, that's a big chunk of change.
Yeah, yeah. And this was accrued over a period of time, like from 2005 to 2017.
Okay, so over a decade.
Over a decade, yeah. Now, the IRS, they suspected, of course, that maybe Mr. Polselli was trying to, shall we say, shield some assets.
I had some money.
Yeah, hide some money, make it a little difficult to collect on what he owed. So they decided to take a look at the financial records of his wife, Hannah Karchel Polselli.
Okay.
And also his law firms.
So going after people close to him.
Exactly. Now, they issued subpoenas to banks.
Hmm.
You know, big names, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, for these records, which are third-party records, right? These aren't directly Mr. Polselli's accounts.
Right.
But here's the catch, and this is what brings us to the heart of the legal issue. They didn't initially tell his wife or the law firms about these subpoenas.
So they were doing it in secret.
Yeah, and that's where the big question becomes and the one we're going to explore.
Lay it on me.
Does the IRS have to, when they're trying to collect taxes, notify individuals or entities when their financial records are subpoenaed, even if those folks aren't the ones who directly owe the back taxes?
So even if you're not the one who owes the money, but your records are somehow involved, do they have to tell you?
Exactly.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so to really understand how the court decided this, we need to get into the actual law that's involved here. It's 26 U.S.C. section 7609. Now, stick with me here. It's not as dry as it sounds. Basically, this law says that if the IRS wants to get your records from, say, your bank,
right,
they have to let you know about it. They have to give you notice. Which, you know, makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you want to know if the government is digging into your finances.
Yeah.
Gives you a chance to maybe say, hey, wait a minute, that's not right. Or challenge it in some way.
Exactly. It provides some transparency and a little bit of a procedural check on the IRS's power.
Right.
But here's the thing about laws. Almost always, there are exceptions.
Oh, boy, there's always a catch.
There's always a catch, right. And this case revolves around one specific exception found in Section 7609, subsection C2DI.
You lost me at the C.
I know, I know. But it's important. This little piece of the law allows the IRS to skip that whole notification thing when the subpoena is issued, quote, in aid of the collection of assessed taxes.
Yeah.
So in this case, the IRS argued that, hey, they were trying to collect the over $2 million Mr. Polselli owed.
Right.
They didn't have to tell his wife or the law firms about the subpoenas they sent to their banks.
Interesting.
And this brings us to that big legal fight that made its way all the way up to the Supreme Court. Does that in aid of collection exception only apply if the taxpayer, Mr. Polselli in this case, directly owns those financial records that are being requested?
Oh, I see. So it boils down to ownership.
Yeah.
Does the taxpayer have to have a legal stake in those records for the IRS to be able to snoop around without notifying anyone?
You got it. And that's a pretty big deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. If you have any kind of financial connection to someone who owes the IRS money,
right,
your records could potentially be scrutinized, even if you've done nothing wrong yourself.
Just because you're associated with that person.
Exactly.
Wow.
So let's rewind a little and go back to the specifics of the case.
Okay.
We know Mr. Polselli had a big tax debt over a decade's worth.
Right.
And the IRS agent working the case, he suspected that Mr. Polselli was trying to hide assets, which is, you know, a classic way to try and avoid paying.
Sure.
So this suspicion led the agent to issue those subpoenas for the financial records of his wife and the law firms.
Thinking maybe there's a connection there, like maybe he shifted some money around.
Right. Or maybe he had some control over funds in those accounts.
Right, right.
But as we said, those subpoenas to Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, and Bank of America, They were initially issued without notifying anyone.
In secret.
Yeah. Now, banks usually do tell their account holders when they get a legal request for records like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of standard procedure.
Right. They have to, kind of,
yeah,
to protect their customers.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened here. The banks told Ms. Volselli and the law firms,
right,
hey, the IRS is asking for your records.
Uh-oh.
And that's when they decided, we're not going to take this lying down.
Right.
They filed a lawsuit to try and stop those subpoenas,
mm-hmm,
arguing that the IRS didn't follow the rules about notification.
So they went to court to fight it?
They went to court.
Yeah.
And initially, the lower courts actually sided with the IRS.
Really?
Yeah. They said, look, this innate of collection exception applies here, and the IRS doesn't have to give prior notice. And they based this decision largely on the exact wording of that section of the law.
Okay.
But here's the thing. This wasn't a universally agreed upon interpretation.
Ah, okay.
Different appellate courts kind of had different views on how this exception should work.
So there wasn't a clear consensus.
No. And that's exactly why the Supreme Court decided, all right, we need to step in here.
They had to settle it.
Settle it once and for all.
Well.
Provide a clear answer for everybody. So up to the Supreme Court it goes.
Yeah.
And what were the big arguments presented?
Yeah, what were the lawyers saying?
Well, the petitioners, that's Ms. Polselli and the law firms, they said, look, the IRS should only be able to skip the notification if Mr. Polselli actually owns the records they're trying to get.
Okay.
Their big concern, I think, was about protecting innocent people who might get caught up in this.
Right, people who haven't done anything wrong.
Exactly, but whose financial information could be looked at just because they happen to be connected to someone who owes taxes.
Right.
But in a unanimous decision, the Supreme Court rejected that argument.
Really? Unanimous?
Unanimous. They said, no, that's not how this works. And they put a lot of emphasis on the actual text of the law.
What do you mean by that?
Well, Chief Justice Roberts, he wrote the opinion, and he really stressed what's called textualism. It's this idea that when you're trying to figure out what a law means, you start with the plain, ordinary meaning of the words.
Okay, so just read the law and interpret it as it's written.
Exactly. And in this case, they said, look, this exception, it doesn't say anything about the taxpayer needing to own the records.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So they just stuck to the letter of the law.
They did. And they made another point that I thought was really interesting. They said, look, if Congress, the guys who wrote the law, if they wanted to include that ownership requirement, they knew how to do it. They even pointed to a different part of the tax code, section 76MB1.
Okay.
That section deals with reimbursement of costs for producing records. And it specifically talks about the taxpayer needing to have a proprietary interest.
Okay, so in that section, ownership matters.
Exactly. And the court was like, see? If they wanted to put an ownership requirement in this other exception, they would have. They didn't, so we're not going to read it in.
That's a pretty strong argument.
It is. Now, another point that came up, kind of a technical legal point, was about redundancy. Some folks were saying, well, if an aid of collection doesn't need a legal interest, then what about this other part of the law, section 7609?
I'm going to need you to repeat that.
Yeah. No, it's a mouthful.
Yeah.
That other part talks about exceptions for people called transferees and fiduciaries.
Yo.
Basically, folks who might be holding assets for the taxpayer.
Oh, okay. I see.
Some people were saying, well, if this in aid of collection thing is so broad, doesn't that make this other part redundant?
Because it covers the same ground.
Right. But the court said, no, not really.
Okay.
They said these two parts of the law address different situations, different kinds of entities. The in aid of collection exception is broader. It applies to any effort to collect from the taxpayer. But the other part, that's specifically about people who are holding the taxpayer's assets, like a trustee or something.
So they have different purposes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, here's where things get even more interesting. The court was unanimous. Everyone agreed on the outcome.
Right.
But Justice Jackson, she wrote a separate opinion, what's called a concurrence.
Okay.
She agreed with the decision based on how the law was written, but she did raise some serious concerns. She pointed out that this ruling could lead to the IRS looking at the financial records of people who have a pretty loose connection to a taxpayer.
Okay.
And these folks might not even know their records are being examined, and they wouldn't have a chance to challenge it initially.
That's a little worrying.
It is. She basically issued a warning saying, hey, we need to be careful here.
Right.
She stressed that courts need to keep a close eye on this to make sure the IRS isn't abusing this power.
Make sure they're not going on fishing expeditions.
Exactly. And she even suggested that maybe Congress needs to step in and clarify the limits of this in aid of collection thing.
Okay, so she agrees with the decision, but is worried about the potential consequences.
Exactly. So what does all this mean for, you know, regular folks? Well, it means the IRS has more leeway now to subpoena financial records when they're trying to collect taxes. They don't have to prove that you personally are the one who owes the money.
So just because you know someone who owes back taxes, your records could be on the table.
Potentially, yeah. And naturally, that's raised some concerns, especially about privacy. The American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, they filed what's called an amicus brief in this case.
What's that?
An amicus brief is basically when a group that's not directly involved in the case gives the court their opinion on the legal issues.
Oh, okay.
And the ACLU, they were worried about the government overreaching and invading the privacy of people who haven't done anything wrong. They argued that being able to challenge a summons is a crucial protection.
Right.
And this ruling weakens that protection.
I can see why they'd be concerned.
Now, another important point is that while the court answered the question about ownership, they didn't really define what exactly in aid of collection means.
So it's still a bit vague.
Yeah, and that means there could be more legal challenges in the future with people arguing about whether a particular subpoena really fits under that exception.
Right, trying to establish clearer boundaries.
Exactly. So to wrap things up, what are the big takeaways from all of this? Well, first, this case shows us how important textualism is to the Supreme Court.
Right, they stuck to the words of the law.
They did. Second, it highlights that constant tension between the government's need to collect taxes, which is important, and the right to privacy.
Yeah, that's always a tricky balance.
It is. And third, it reminds us that procedural safeguards, like this notification requirement, are really important in our legal system.
They protect us from government overreach.
Exactly. So in a nutshell, the Supreme Court in Polselli v. IRS decided that the IRS doesn't need to show that you personally own the financial records thereafter when they're trying to collect taxes from someone else.
As long as they can argue that getting those records helps them with their collection efforts.
Right. And this has big implications for how much power the IRS has and what we can expect in terms of privacy when it comes to our financial records.
Even if we're not the ones who owe taxes.
Exactly. So here's something for everyone to ponder. Given the concerns Justice Jackson raised about privacy, how do we balance the need for effective tax collection with protecting the privacy of people who aren't directly involved? And could this ruling have implications for how the government can access other kinds of personal data beyond just financial records? Thanks for joining us for the deep dive. We'll catch you next time.
See you there.